Thank you for listening to this sermon from Arapahoe Road Baptist Church. We hope you enjoy the teaching of Dr. David Rogers, lead pastor of Arapahoe Road. For more information about our church and its ministries, please visit arapahoeroad.org. And now, here's Pastor David Rogers.
I was sitting on the back porch this morning, as I normally do, just thinking through the day, praying through the day. I was sharing this earlier in our prayer time with some who come. And by the way, you're always, anybody's invited to join us for a morning prayer. We pray for about 15, 20 minutes or so in the library area at 9 o'clock each Sunday. And I was just sharing these words. I was reading through John 15 and Phil Porter and I, if you don't know who Phil Porter is, he served on our staff here for several years. He's relocated out to Virginia, and he and I are, and some others actually, are walking through a daily devotional. We're just methodically reading through the New Testament, and one of our favorite theologians, N.T. Wright, has some commentary around the passages that we read each day. And this is what I was reading this morning. It was really talking about what it means to be in community, and as we talk about around here, that's one of our taglines. We're in community and on mission, and we've talked about what that means and try to put some descriptors around that. We talk about how when we think about being in community and on mission, think of the cross. There's a horizontal piece of being in community. There's a vertical piece of being in community, and listen to these words that N.T. Wright said. He said, "We must remain in the community that knows and loves Jesus and that celebrates him as the Lord," which is what we're doing this morning. Listen here. There is no such thing as a solitary Christian. We can't go it alone. But we must also remain a people of prayer and worship in our private lives and corporately. We must make sure to be in touch, in tune with Jesus, knowing him and being known by him. I don't know what kind of week you've had. Maybe you've been kind of like me. At the end of every day, I've got about 4 hours that are in the recliner, and I'm locked into Rio. Bom dia, my Brazilian friends over here. And just, I mean, what's happening there? I mean, yesterday, thank the Lord for DVR. I mean, it started early with English Premier Soccer, and then it unfolded with Olympics. I mean, when else are you going to sit there and watch fencing and be into it? Right? Yeah, I'm into it. And then the Rangers are playing later, and I mean, you know, FC Dallas is playing, and the Cowboys are playing. Dak Prescott, not bad. Not bad. Yeah. You know, and then just late into the night watching Michael Phelps just unbelievably do what he does so well, and others, and you know, I mean, just thinking how the Lord may be positioning him. And how, if you haven't read the story that's been unfolding since he got his second DUI, and how Ray Lewis, he's from Baltimore, Maryland, how Ray Lewis has really been an impact on him for good, and gave him, before he went to rehab, the purpose-driven life that Pastor Rick Warren wrote, that's affected, I think, 40, 50 million people have read that book, and it really was a game changer for Michael Phelps. And I follow Rick Warren on Twitter, and he you know, mentioned this morning, you know, congratulations. I can't help but believe that there's not more of a story that's about to be written there. I don't know if Phelps is is a follower of Christ yet or not, but I have a feeling he's going to have a serious opportunity to be able to do that. And so, man, I don't know what kind of week you've had. If it's been a crazy week, if you have had a great week, if you've had a terrible week, if you've had a week that you just don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, or maybe you're still thinking about what happened yesterday or last year or 10 years from now, I'm really glad you're in this place. It's a good day to be in God's house. It's a good day to be with the people of God. And if you don't know if you're one or not, just know you're welcome here. And your Father in heaven loves you, and he's so glad you're here today. He knew you'd be here. And I hope that you'll stay and enjoy lunch with us and enjoy some ice cream sundaes and enjoy some games. We're just going to have a good time being the family of God today. If you have your Bible, why don't you turn with me to Acts 23. I don't want to take but probably 10 or 12 minutes before we move toward the Lord's Supper. Acts 23, if you're using the Bible in the row in front of you, is on page 932. And as we prepare to celebrate the Lord's Supper together in a few minutes, I want to wrap this chapter in Acts that we've been walking through over the past few weeks. I want to wrap it up this morning. There's something that I want us to see that I believe is right in line with what we're instructed to do as we prepare to take the Lord's Supper. And then as we do take the Lord's Supper, Paul tells us over in 1 Corinthians 11, we'll be there in a little bit, but in 1 Corinthians 11, 26, he says this. He says, "For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." And what we see at the conclusion this morning of Acts 23 is God positioning the Apostle Paul to proclaim the Lord's death and the Lord's burial and the Lord's resurrection, his ascension, to some of the most influential leaders of the whole world in that day and age. And only God could do that. Only God could do what he's doing with Paul, in Paul, and through Paul. In fact, it's what I titled my message. It's real brief today. As we prepare to proclaim the Lord's death until he comes, only God could do that. Only God could do the things that God's doing. And what we're going to read today in Acts 23, we'll just wrap the chapter up. We left off last week in verse 23, and we'll go through verse 35. Last week, if you were here, there was a little boy that was in the message that we read, and this little boy happened to be Paul's nephew. And Paul's nephew was used by God to thwart an assassination attempt on his uncle Paul's life. There was a group of over 40 angry Jewish men who wanted to just get rid of Paul. They wanted to just out him, get him off the planet. And only God, in his providence, could use a little boy to thwart 40-plus angry Jewish men in their assassination attempt. But God has a plan for Paul's life. He's got a plan for your life and my life. Don't ever let anybody tell you any differently. He does. He knows you. He knows where you're going. He knows where you've been. He knows who he wants you to become. And God has a plan for Paul's life. And the Lord, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the Lord encouraged Paul in a supernatural way, a supernatural vision in the night. That he just says, "Paul, you've been faithful in sharing about me, proclaiming about me here in Jerusalem. You're going to do the same thing in Rome. I'm standing by you." We talked about the Muhammad Ali pose a few weeks ago. He stood by Paul. Hindsight is what? Hindsight is 2020. Hindsight's 2020. If you were to go back and watch, look again how the Lord has been at work in Paul's life, in Paul's circumstances, as he's come into Jerusalem. It's been a few months since we started that part of the walk in Acts 21, and then we moved through Acts 22, and now we're in Acts 23. You can see God at work in some really difficult situations. If you were to go back and read, you'd see where Paul was warned not to go to Jerusalem. If he goes to Jerusalem, he's going to get arrested there. Paul had set his face like flint toward Jerusalem. He said, I got to go to Jerusalem. And he said, you go there, you're going to get bound and handed over to the officials, to the authorities. And that's exactly what ended up happening. That's why he's in the situation that he's in right now, this part of the text. This was right after he had brought a financial gift and a blessing to James and the elders at the church there in Jerusalem. And after Paul, through his humble maturity of compromise, followed the lead of James and of the elders to try and clear his name from these rumors that had been going around, he goes into the temple. He's a part of financing this, what's called a Nazarite vow, from these four Jewish men. And while he's there, these angry Jewish men who also are at the temple, they see Paul, they recognize Paul, they start a riot, they all start beating Paul up, they jump him and start beating him up in the temple. And then the Roman guard who's on duty at the temple to try to keep the peace, they end up stepping in, they rescue Paul from his own death at the hands of his own people. I mean, it's a crazy story, is it not? Think about what God is doing. Only God could do this. Paul ends up testifying of his faith in Jesus, proclaiming the Lord's death until he comes. He proclaims the Lord's death right before the Jewish Supreme Court because he just followed God's lead. He almost gets torn limb from limb. And then he finds himself isolated in a barrack. He's down in the dumps. He's going, my goodness, is this, am I really doing what you want me to do, God? And that's where in verse 11, the Lord stands by him. He says, yeah, you're doing what's right. You're doing what I've led you to do. You're proclaiming me here. And not only here, but you're going to proclaim me all the way to Rome. Only God could do that. I mean, only God could allow his nephew to catch wind of a rumor that the next day a plot was being hatched to kill Paul. It's underway. And it leads us to this morning. You go, what does all that have to do with the Lord's Supper? Hang with me. Hang with me. Watch this. It leads us to the response of this Roman tribune named Claudius Lysias. His nickname is what? Claude. Yes, it's Claudius Lysias. Get your tongue tied. So Claude, the Roman tribune, is sitting here going, what am I going to do with this guy? Because he's under my authority. I mean, I'm the boss around here. This is on my watch. And the last thing that Claude needs is for Paul, who's a Roman citizen, to be assassinated in Jerusalem on his watch. Claude has been tasked with keeping the peace. And an assassination on his watch would cause him to be in deep trouble. And probably would cause him not only to lose his job, but probably to lose his head. Because of the Pax Romana. The peace of Rome is a big deal. We don't like there to be tribulations. Rome likes peaceful waters, no matter the cost. So Claude is trying to figure out what in the world's going on with this guy, Paul. How am I going to keep the peace? I've got to get Paul out of harm's way. And at the same time, I've got to put myself in the best possible light with my supervisor. His supervisor was the governor, and his name is Governor Felix. Governor Felix is stationed 67 miles up the coast from Jerusalem at a place called Caesarea. I was there on March the 8th, 2015. I have it written in my Bible right here. In Acts 24, 3, 8, 15, I was at Caesarea. I stood right there where all this is happening. I'm like going, wow, this is where it happened. It really happened. This isn't in a galaxy far, far away. It happened a long time ago. But it happened a few thousand miles from here. Really happened here.
And so Claude is sitting there and he's going, man, I got to come up with a plan. So Claude comes up with a plan to help Paul escape when his nephew tells him about this plot. He's like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to escape tonight with the help of a large group of Roman soldiers, and they're going to lead Paul to safety up to Governor Felix, 67 miles to the north in Caesarea. We're going on horseback. We're leaving at the third watch of the night. The third watch of the night is 9 o'clock, about when Michael Phelps was winning his 23rd gold medal last night. So look with me with that backstory, how Acts 23, verses 23 to 35 describes this scene after the Roman tribune named Claude hears of this plot on Paul's life from this little kid who was his nephew. Verse 23, then he, Claude, called two of the centurions and said, get ready 200 soldiers with 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen to go as far as Caesarea at the third hour of the night, 9 o'clock. Verse 24, also provide mounts for Paul to ride and bring him safely to Felix, the governor. And he wrote a letter to this effect. You go, why is he writing a letter? Well, he's writing a letter because in that day, anytime a prisoner was transported somewhere else, transported into somebody else's custody, a letter would accompany that prisoner for legal purposes. They're documenting. They're communicating, and they are documenting who this guy is, why he's coming here, and what the charges were. In other words, Claude, the Roman tribune, he's trying to cover his rear end. Yes. Do you ever have anybody say, why don't you document that, send a little email alongside that so that we have a paper trail. He wants a paper trail because he's going to get Paul off of his desk and onto his supervisor. Your problem. Tired of dealing with this guy. So here's the letter. Starts off real formal, just like letters in that day would. Claudius Lysias, to His Excellency the Governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be killed by them when I came upon them with the soldiers and rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman citizen. A little bit of revisionist history there. It's not exactly how it happened. He found out that Paul was a Roman citizen as he's being strung up to be flogged trying to get a confession out of him, which was illegal, by the way. But hey, you know, don't worry about that. Revisionist history helped put Claude in the best possible light before he could, as he's getting ready to stand for his supervisor. Verse 28, and desiring to know the charge for which they were accusing him, I brought him down to their council. I put him right in front of the Jewish Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin. And I found out that he was being accused about questions of their law, but charged with nothing deserving death or imprisonment. In other words, Governor, this guy should be set free. He hadn't done anything deserving death, in my humble opinion. But that ain't for me to decide. That's for you to decide. Verse 30. And when it was disclosed to me that there would be a plot against the man, I sent him to you at once, ordering his accusers also to state before you what they have against him. Verse 31. So the letter's done, okay? Now she's going to tell what's going on. So the soldiers, according to their instructions, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. And on the next day, that's about halfway, on the next day, they returned to the barracks, letting the horsemen go on with him. When they'd come to Caesarea and delivered the letter to the governor, they presented Paul also before him. And on reading the letter, he, Governor Felix, asked Paul what province he was from. And when he learned that he was from Cilicia, he said, I will give you a hearing when your accusers arrive. And he commanded him to be guarded in Herod's praetorium. It's the word of the Lord. I stood right where that conversation took place. And what God just allowed to happen, Think about this. What God just allowed to happen by his divine providence and his sovereign wisdom is to allow the Romans to rescue Paul and to position him to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with the most influential Romans of the day. Only God could do that. Think about it. For the last several years of Paul's life, think about this. For the last several years of Paul's life, Paul's been doing his darndest to stay away from the Romans, to stay out of their sights. Why? Because he's been telling the story, he's been proclaiming another king. The King of the Jews, Jesus Christ, he's the king. And I'm telling you, that's not a popular message when Caesar is king. He's saying, Jesus is Lord. Everybody in that day was saying, no, Caesar is Lord. And if you say Caesar is Lord, you get to keep your head. If you say somebody else is Lord, off with your head. So Paul is trying to stay out of the sidelines of the Romans for the last several years as he's sharing the gospel all over occupied territory. And now, the people that he's been trying to avoid are saying, come here. Let us keep you safe and rescue you. We'll put you right in the middle of the very people you've been trying to avoid because you're a Roman citizen and you deserve a right to testify. And what's Paul going to do? Proclaim his death until he comes. Only God could do that. Only God could do that. And as you and I prepare right now to take the elements of the bread and the cup to celebrate the Lord's Supper and to proclaim his death until he comes, may we do so remembering something. May we do so remembering that no matter the circumstances that you may find yourself in today, God is standing by you. He's standing over you as a warrior. He is with you. He is for you. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. And no matter how difficult your life circumstances may be, Jesus wants you to be a proclaimer. He wants you to be a proclaimer to others of the good news of Jesus Christ and how he is the way and the truth and the life, how he's the one who rescues us from sin, death, Satan, and hell because of what he did on the cross. And no matter what you are going through, God desires for you to be a proclaimer of him until he comes.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Feel free to distribute this recording, but please do not sell or alter it in any way. For more information about Arapahoe Road Baptist Church, please visit our church website at arapahoeroad.org. Arapahoe Road Baptist Church is located at 2256 Arapahoe Road in Garland, Texas, with Sunday morning services at 9:30 a.m. Feel free to join us this week.